Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
Yes, Sci-Fi, Sci-Fi, Sci-Fi. A podcast in which normally I'm supposed to come up with something clever to say here, but this week I did not.
Merry Christmas. Aww.
Merry Christmas.
Yes. Merry Krampus. I don't remember the name.
Krampusmas.
Yes.
Saturnalia. So, happy Saturnalia.
Speaking of which, Kevin, would you tell us what it is that we are reading this a week?
The Bear and the Nightingale by Catherine Arden.
And who narrated it?
Kathleen Gotti.
Okay. So could you give us a reading from the back of the book, please?
At the edge of the Russian wilderness, winter lasts most of the year and the snowdrifts grow taller than houses. But Vasilisa doesn't mind. She spends the winter nights huddled around the embers of a fire with her beloved siblings, listening to her nurse's fairy tales. Above all, she loves the chilling story of Frost, the blue-eyed winter demon, who appears in the frigid night to claim unwary souls. Wise Russians fear him, her nurse says, and honor the spirits of the house and yard and forest that protect their homes from evil. After Vasilisa's mother dies, her father goes to Moscow and brings home a new wife. Fiercely devout, city-bred, Vasilisa's new stepmother forbids her family from honoring the household spirits. The family acquiesces, but Vasilisa is frightened, sensing that more hinges upon the rituals than anyone knows. And indeed, crops begin to fail, evil creatures of the forest creep near, and misfortune stalks the village. All the while, Vasilisa's stepmother grows even harsher in her determination to groom her rebellious stepdaughter for either marriage or confinement in a convent. As danger circles, Vasilisa must defy even the people she loves and call on dangerous gifts she has long concealed. This in order to protect her family from a threat that seems to have stepped from her nurse's most frightening tales.
All right. Well, this is a book where the author states what she wants to do. She wants to create a novel that is based on a folktale, and she does it. And she has very interesting settings and really interesting main characters. And so for me, the book succeeds on its own terms. It just doesn't quite succeed for me on the terms of a fantasy novel, because although we've got an interesting main character, you know, she doesn't necessarily do a whole lot, or maybe she does. It's kind of hard to figure out sometimes. The writing is good, but it just never quite grabbed me. And so I think that subjectively, I didn't particularly love it, but objectively, I would say, you know, this is a book based on a fairy tale, and it's not really a fantasy novel. It's a fairy tale novel. And if you read it on those terms, you might very well enjoy it more than I did. Barry, what did you think?
It was all right. There's some parts that I really liked, and I guess there were some other parts that I found myself kind of trudging through.
How did you become Kevin?
It's finally worn off. I feel dirty and used.
Now my work here is complete.
Moving on with haste.
Yes. You know, I actually did like this book, and I don't think I liked it as much as, you know, many of the reviews I've read. But I think I kind of, like you said, I liked it on its own terms. I liked it. I liked the setting. It's sort of like I liked inhabiting the book, but the climactic scene wasn't like this amazing thing for me. But it's like I liked the environment of the book. I liked the right. setting. I liked the language, and I liked how she wrote.
It succeeds all those in terms things. Of, yeah, style and world.
And I thought the narrator, I think, you know, oh, yeah. I thought she did a good job. So I liked all of that stuff. It's just that there was a complexity of, like you said, of a plot line that seemed to kind of wander about a bit. Mm-hmm. It was sort of like, and then stuff happened.
Right.
And like you said, I think it's kind of like, it's more of a fairy tale than a fantasy novel. So I guess I would say it kind of reminds me stylistically like Oz books. Oz books are kind of like high nonsense. A lot of really fantastical and very imaginative stuff happens in it, but it doesn't really make a cohesive story. And this made much more of a cohesive story than a lot of the Oz books do.
Right.
You know, it's like a lot of stuff happens, but not for a particular reason. Just they're like touring the land and weird stuff happens. Here it's like they're in a setting and a lot of, you know, Russian folktale stuff happens.
Right.
And so you get to kind of experience that. And I really enjoyed that part, but it didn't seem to progress towards a very rigid plot line, I guess, and a culmination of something. It was just sort of like, and here's some stuff you might not know about, you know, the history and the folklore of this region, which is all true. And I enjoyed that part.
Yeah. And the thing is, I remember reading a bunch of Russian fairy tales when I was a kid. And I remembered having kind of a similar reaction that, oh, wow, you know, these tales are nice, but, you know, there's this story about this, I think, you know, girl who is imprisoned by Baba Yaga and, you know, her mother inhabits the spirit of a doll or something like that and gives her all of, you know, she winds up with all of this magic stuff and she escapes by basically throwing stuff behind her as she runs, you know, she throws down a comb and it becomes a river and she throws down this and she isn't doing anything that isn't being whispered to her by superior beings or, you know, isn't being, you know, it's all stuff that she's been told to do. And so she's
it's almost like she's just sort of caught in a river and it's just,
yeah,
you know, you're just being carried downstream and there's no chance to, you know, get off the, you know, proverbial rails.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, I'll say that, you know, Vasya, the main character, you know, she definitely bucks the trend of like what is expected of a female in that culture.
That's
right?
Definitely true.
And that's kind of the point of it, as far as I could tell, is, you know, we can go into spoilery details later, but she basically makes her own decision. She doesn't do what she's told. And she actually kind of supports, you know, her traditions. She like, you know, right. She feeds the spirits and stuff like that. And so it's sort of like, it's her qualities that, you know, win the day.
Right.
And that's, I would say that was the kind of the point is like, she was her own woman. She did her own stuff and she didn't just do what was expected of her. And that was kind of like the outcome, I think.
Right. And so it wasn't necessarily that's what I mean about it succeeded on its own terms, but didn't succeed as a fantasy novel. By the end of a fantasy novel, I'm expecting to be in a different place. This place, you know, this novel ended where it ended, and that was where it was setting out to be. I just didn't grab me in the same way, and that's, you know, probably all I need to say about it.
I think this book was more along the lines of like Norse gods. Mm-hmm. That we read recently.
Yeah.
Yeah, it actually, that came to mind too.
It's more of like a recounting of what occurred, mm-hmm. you know, in retrospect, as opposed to sort of, you know, pulling you into the moment of the book itself.
Right.
And yeah, I really liked kind of learning more about sort of Russian folklore.
Yeah, I felt that was like by far like the neatest part of, you know, the book, because I don't know a whole lot about, you know, the Russian folklore and, you know, mm-hmm. I started to see some, you know, similarities with, you know, other cultural folklore systems. So I thought that was kind of neat.
And I think that's definitely kind of a, you know, one of the main strengths of the book. And also I think, you know, I mean, I think we can talk about this now a little bit, which is, you know, what makes folklore, what makes, you know, sort of like tall tales.
Right.
When does fantasy become folklore, or vice versa?
Well, yeah, it's like, what's a fairy tale? What's folklore? What's fantasy? And I think some of it is like, it's like high nonsense, high, you know, it's very imaginative and usually completely off the rails, like tall tales, where it's just, you know, things that are not logical, like, you know, suddenly something grows to be the size of a house, or, you know, things that don't quite make logical sense, but they just sort of happen, like you were saying with the Norse gods.
Right. Stuff where it doesn't actually make any sense to say, well, that doesn't make any sense given the physics of the universe. I mean,
right. It's like you just say, okay, well, you know, they're human size. Now they're the size of a forest. Now they're this and stuff, you know, not in this story, but just like in the Norse gods.
Yeah. I mean, Norse gods was like, it was a lot more, I don't know what the term is, maybe fantastic.
Right.
It was like, just, you know, like we were saying, it was sort of really, some of the parts were just very off the rails. Mm-hmm. Like this, I didn't feel like there was a lot of off the rails elements.
Right.
But it still feels like it falls closer to that genre versus something like Uprooted or something.
Yeah, I think so. And that actually, I think, is a problem with how this book is being marketed, which is not the book's fault, but yeah. They keep on saying, oh, this is, you know, if you liked Uprooted, and I'm thinking, okay, so this is going to be just like Uprooted, where, I mean, that was a fantasy novel.
Yeah, it definitely had a theme to it. And this doesn't seem to follow that same theme as rigidly as I think the back of the book purports.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's, you know, like you're saying, it's not the book's fault. And it's definitely helpful for marketing to sell more units, right?
Right.
But I had the expectation that, you know, Uprooted was one of my favorite books, you know, when we read it.
Right.
And it's still, like, you know, on my top whatever list. And so I'm like, this is going to be awesome. And, like, so the problem, you know, part of that is my fault, where it's like I can get, you know, I can set it really high expectations and it's really difficult to meet my high expectations. And then I'm like, oh, it's not quite as awesome as I thought it was going to be. So I have to really kind of try to dial it down, you know, and not make it the work's fault. You know, it's more like my expectations' fault.
Yeah, the back of the book definitely set the bar pretty high with the comparison to Uprooted and you know, Neil Gaiman's work.
And, you know, honestly, given that this is the author's first book, and she wasn't really setting out to be an author, as far as I could tell from reading some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, I think her writing is actually quite impressive.
Oh, yes.
And I'm not just saying that because it's like, oh, it's her first book, pretty good for a first book. No, it's actually, you know, good for a book.
Right. Yes, I think we have succeeded in mostly reviewing ourselves and the marketing. So I think it's probably time for us to move on to the discussion section. Either that or all of these Domovoy are probably, you know, I can't decide if they're a hallucination or if we're in the George Lucas special edition of reality.
You should be terrified at how many I do have in my home.
Actually, I'm just not even surprised.
Do you feed them?
Of course.
That's okay, why we're here.
Yes.
Anyway, we shall return, for we are sci-fi.
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 All right, and welcome back to our discussion section. So one thing that I thought this book did very well was setting and world building. Did we have any sort of favorite things about the setting?
Winter. Actually, I'm a sucker for heavy winter books and things like that. I don't know why, but like in high school, we had to read that, what was it, The Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich or whatever it was. And I was like, this book is awesome. He's eating this like gruel with like, you know, back of an old moldy piece of bread. I like books where they talk about eating food, and I like and I like books about
being in the winter. We're done.
So yeah. And in this book, they actually slept on the oven. So, you know, come on, it's awesome.
Yeah, that's how cold it was. You could actually sleep on the oven and not burn yourself.
I mean, that's kind of what I mean, is like I imagine it's easier for me to imagine, like, you know, being huddled up in the winter, it's freezing. You're like, you know, you're sleeping on this giant oven that's like half of the room.
And you know, it just now occurs to me that the oven was wood burning. Even though, like, for some reason, when I was picturing it, I was just like imagining like an electric powered one for some bizarre reason. That is not the author's fault.
On the bicycle. Yeah. So the Domovoy was what, the hearth or the house,
right?
The house spirit, the
house elf.
Yes. Yeah. That was something that I definitely didn't know that name. I mean, I'm familiar with the concept of that, but you know, Barry, you had mentioned the stuff where it kind of was like the Miyazaki things you thought.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, like in Spirited Away in particular, there's a lot of like house spirits that are sort of running around, and even in Howl's Moving Castle, you know, there's the Ember character who's sort of like the flame that's in the fire pit. You know, he has to be kind of fed on a regular basis, and most of the time before, you know, the main character showed up, he was kind of just, you know, left to fend for himself and, you know, beg for scraps of wood from other house spirits. He's like, oh God, please feed me. I don't want to go out.
Yeah. And I really liked that, you know, I wouldn't say concept, but you know, I kind of liked that part of the setting, was just that, you know, every house has these spirits, and every different, like there was the stable spirit, and I guess it was the water spirit, and that, you know, the Rusalka, the, what was it? The Vasila was the stable one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's like a kitchen spirits, and you know,
and each one kind of, you know, helps out with different things, you know, like actually that they do some of the mending and the cleaning and stuff like that when you kind of, you know, give offerings to them and kind of keep them strong.
Right.
And like even like later on where, you know, later on in the book when Constantine and the priest comes and they kind of, you know, there's kind of like this tension between the traditional spirits and their sort of, you know, traditional beliefs in like Christianity that when they come in. And apparently that was sort of a thing where they coexisted for a long time.
Right.
And, but there was always kind of this, you know, tension in different regions. And so they, I guess, you know, in this book when he's like, okay, and let's not, you know, do crazy pagan stuff, you know. And
yeah, that's when the stepmother shows up and says, you know, we're going to stop this nonsense.
Right. And she's the one who can see the spirits, but she thinks that they're demons and devils and stuff. And she just sort of freaks out, except, you know, when she's in the church, they're not there. Right.
And that was actually one of the choices that I really liked, because they took the evil stepmother character and made her at least someone you could sympathize with, because right. She didn't want to be mean. She wasn't sort of waking up and say, oh, I'm going to be all evil today. She basically was just completely freaked out, and her beliefs told her one thing. And so she was interpreting all of these spirits that she could see as demons. And so she was terrified of them and was trying to banish them.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting that the, you know, Wicked Witch character, you know, in this, or the Wicked Stepmother character in this book was really sort of like, you know, hip deep in the magic that, you know, the main character was in.
Right.
Right. You don't typically see that. You just sort of, you know, see the evil stepmother who's just like just being evil for evil's sake.
Right. Or being greedy. And this, yeah, you're right. This time she's very sympathetic. You know, later on she becomes less sympathetic after the, you know, really injuring the main character. But it's, I think, you know, there's still kind of that aspect to it that you can kind of be like, well, you know, she's not trying to be evil. She's just completely freaking out and trying to like save herself. And
well, and although it had sort of been pre-announced from the beginning, this is the evil stepmother, I was still kind of hoping, okay, can't these two just open up and talk to each other and agree that, but I mean,
I was kind
that's
of hoping,
not a flaw of the book. I was just hoping that was the case.
Yeah, yeah. I was kind of thought that might be a twist later on, or I thought at the very beginning that they would be, you know, friends from right away. Would they go, oh, we can both see the spirits, but then right. You kind of go, okay, it's not going that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought they may, you know, maybe in the future it would join forces or something, or
right.
And you know, that clearly didn't happen, but
right. Because she was sort of following the overall bones of the tale.
And, right.
Although I don't think, I think it went away from the tale at the end, because she was rewarded by the Frost King, but her sister didn't have to be sacrificed to it or anything like that, as far as I remember.
Yeah.
Right. Because in the fairy tale version in the beginning, it's one of the classic ones where the daughter is sent to the forest and she comes back dripping with gold. And so the stepmother says, oh, well, I'll send my daughter, who is better, out right. to the forest. And then she just winds up dead.
Right. And it's kind of like, you know, he likes bravery. He doesn't like just people coming out and going, and like, you know.
And also, as with so many fairy tales, the hidden message is, don't complain, child.
Yeah. Be happy for what you already have.
Stop complaining that you're cold.
Go sleep on the oven.
I will tell you a story now about not complaining when you're cold.
Yes, indeed.
I have yet to find a story that will keep miniature schnauzers from barking. But that's another story.
You need a filibuster or something. It's a dog treat filibuster. You just keep giving them dog treats and they don't have a chance to bark.
Until they're completely distended. And
exactly. Kevin's new variant on dog training. Just keep giving them treats.
It works every time, I heard.
Even if you had to cram one down their little mouth.
Anyway. Okay. So, yes. One of the enduring themes of this is women's place in society and how Vasya basically was not fitting into the standard locations that, you know, and they spelled them out very specifically that there were only a few things you could do in Russian society. I'm assuming that Russian is the proper term for this society right now. I don't know.
I think that's a pretty good generic term. I'm not sure it's entirely accurate
right.
given the time frame, but yeah.
Right. One of the themes in the book was the role of women in Russian society. There were basically only a few places that women could be they could be nuns or they could be housewives turning out babies, basically.
And doing the housework. Don't forget the housework part.
Yes. And Vasya did not fit in any of those, nor did she want to. And people trying to fit her into those categories and her breaking out of them was sort of a recurring theme.
Yeah, she would sort of consistently defy the norms by doing things that people would expect her not to do.
Right.
Like ride horses, you know, like boys, and even ride without a saddle and things like that. And parents would get upset about it or, you know, try and counsel her to not do that anymore. Right. It just sort of like just didn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they had that whole scene where, you know, they had her suitor all lined up and she was supposed to get married soon. And I don't know exactly what happened, but there was something where one of his relatives was on the horse, like one of the younger relatives.
And she saved him.
And she saved him, but they basically, you know, she scares off the suitor because she's, you know, too active in the situation. And, you know, it's like, they're like, well, thanks for preventing the kid from getting killed, but okay, now I've been shamed, so, you know, whatever,
bye. Wedding's off.
And, right. And it was sort of like, okay, which would you rather have had, you know, she could sit back and have the kid get killed, but you still, you know.
You're still a man.
Yeah, yeah, apparently. So, yeah, that is, I mean, it's one of those things where it's kind of like a ridiculous double standard that, you know, they didn't see it that way, apparently. But
well, and also she wasn't really taking huge steps to avoid getting married at that point.
Well, she just didn't want to.
She didn't want to.
She kind of said, unless one day I will, I think.
Right.
But she
was not being sort of hauled into it. You know, the point was not that she had run away or something like that.
Right, right. She was kind of going along with it, and she was thinking it might turn out okay, but, you know, it's not really.
What she wanted, yeah.
She was more concerned about staying to protect her family, and she was the only one at that point that was sort of like, you know, being friends with the spirits and that kind of stuff. And I don't think at that point it had gotten so bad that they needed their protection, but, yeah, that was something that happened later on where the brother, right, as they say, the bear and the nightingale.
Right.
The bear is Frost's one-eyed brother, who's also known as the bear, and I don't remember what the other term for him was, but early on, Vasya's out, gets lost in the forest, you know, just playing as a kid.
Right.
And she, because she has this sort of like magical lineage, you know, through her mother, she somehow slips into this like dream time place, you know, where Frost lives.
Right. Narnia.
You know, yeah. The big oak. So she's, you know, freaking out. She finds the oak and then she finds this guy that, you know, was sleeping, and the guy wakes up and, you know, that was like the one-eyed brother of Frost who likes to, you know, he was the bringer of storms and fire and all that stuff. And he was sort of the guy who Frost tries to keep asleep. He's sort of like the nemesis.
Right. Yes. You were talking about brothers in the notes. You raised such archetypes as yes. Heat Miser and
Snow Miser.
Snow Miser from
The Year Without Santa Claus, the great 1970s Rankin Bass, you know.
Mr. Heat Miser.
Yes. It that's what popped into my head, the whole brothers and Frost and everything.
And I think I spent the last 30 years of my life striking that from my memory. Now it's all come back.
That's what we're here for. Pain we can actually go now.
Pain and suffering.
Exactly. Yes.
This won't hurt a bit.
So another thing that I thought, I wouldn't say it fell flat, but it didn't seem to go where you would expect in a fantasy novel, was what was up with the blue jewel, right? The blue talisman.
Right. So it's one of those classic fairy tale types of scenarios where her father sort of gets into a fight with this supernatural being. I guess that was Moroshko. I forget who it was.
Oh, well, so it was his son.
Oh, okay.
Alyosha, I guess, who sort of,
well, yeah.
Yeah. The son gets mad, right? He's in a bad mood. They're leaving Moscow and going home, and he sees this guy like messing with his father's horse, and he kind of rushes up to be the big man. He's like, "What are you doing?" And I guess, you know, as they kind of show in that culture, he's insulted this guy, so the guy can essentially legally kill him for insulting him.
Right.
And his dad is sort of like, oh crap, I'm really sorry, please don't kill him. Right. Like,
and his dad figures out that this guy is supernatural.
Right, because basically it goes into this like frozen moment of time where everyone is just sort of like slack-jawed, And so they're either, you know, bewitched or they're just like frozen and in
Neo
like,
bullet time.
Yeah, basically. And so the guy's like, okay, I won't kill him, but you got to do one thing. Here's this like magical blue jewel, which is glowing and crazy and stuff, and give it to your daughter. She has to have with her all the time. And he's, and the father, Pyotr, at least doesn't go, okay, okay, cool. He's, he's like, well, I'm not going to do anything that will endanger her. And he's kind of like, what? Well, he's like, well, okay, I can respect the fact that you're not just like being a pushover. but you know, you better do it. And, and so he kind of goes, okay. And
well, he swears that no harm will come to
her. After he says, it, you know, it'll be okay. So then,
but was this Moroshko that he was talking to?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, Moroshko, the, you know, the frost demon or the whatever. And
Jack Frost.
And so then, you know, Pyotr brings it home. He's giving out all the presents for everybody. You know, he'd been on looking for a present, for Vasya, but you know, he's like, she's not the girl who wants the jewels. She's not the girl who wants a pretty dress. She, you know,
she's
he's like,
hard
I don't
to
know.
Shop for.
Yeah, basically.
Did he try her Amazon wish list?
Yeah, no signal there. So
too far north.
So he gives the jewel to, you know, the nursemaid, right?
Right.
And she's like, oh crap, I know what this is. This is like this talisman is gonna like mark her for, you know, I don't know if she knows this for the frost demon, but she knows it's something that's major. And so she's like, doesn't give it to her. And then she keeps having these dreams about, you really need to give it to her. It's for her. And then she kind of in her dream talks to the guy and says, well, you know, she's too young. And so the guy's like, okay, okay. and finally she keeps holding off. And then it kind of turns out later, oh, it's supposed to, you know, you thought it was going to basically enslave her or make her like the concubine of the demon or the spirit or whatever.
The classic thing is that it's some kind of bad thing.
Yeah. But in fact, it's supposed to give her some power to help protect the village and the area. And so the nursemaid doesn't find out about that until like right before she dies, basically. And she's like, oh crap, I waited too long.
And one of the things that didn't work for me with this book was that her powers are very indirect. I mean, she's like the Aquaman of the Russian wilderness. She can summon things.
Well, right. So that's kind of what I was wondering was, you know, and I'm saying it's not a necessarily an inherent bad thing. It's just that the expectation was for at least half of the book, it's like, oh, when is she going to get the jewel? And it keeps coming back up over and over and over again. It's not just like once or twice. Okay, she finally has it. And in fact, the chapter title was essentially like, oh, she gets the jewel now. and then what happens is like every once in a while they mention that
it's glowing with cold fire or something like
and,
that.
And, you know, so you get the idea, okay, there's some power in it. It gives her power. It's a channel. It's something. Maybe you get the idea it helps her be located by Frost or maybe it summons him or something, but they don't really ever say.
But yeah, the big thing that she does is to call to all of these spirits, and she can even say, call the spirit from the hearth, even though she's in the forest and, you know, everybody comes running. And I think that was supposed to be the jewel.
Yeah. Now that you say that, and I think that could have been it, but it was very implicit. I don't expect a book to be, and because she had the jewel, she was able to do this. But
here is the precise composition of the jewel and the mechanics of how this all works.
Right. It's like, where's the stat block at the end? Like, you know,
I mean, that's what we want, but that is unfair to ask of a book.
To be fair, a lot of the books that I've liked in the past are ones that don't explicitly spell out everything, but leave something to your own imagination a little
bit.
Absolutely. Sure.
And I was expecting more of a payoff because it was such a recurring thing. You know, because a lot of books, it'll be like this thing, you know, that's hidden. They finally get it. And then it's like a big pivotal part of the book where it's like, look, I held up the magic thing and it made the bad thing go away or whatever.
Right.
In this book, she just had it on. And so the implication was that it was helping her in some way. But they didn't really even, as far as I remember, even explicitly say anything about it.
I'll bet that somebody could explain it to us in about three words and we'd be like, oh, and then we'd read the book again.
Yeah. So maybe I just missed it. I don't know. I mean, you know, it wasn't bad. It was just like, I was expecting more of a direct payoff.
Right. Now, we really shouldn't compare this to, say, you know, Naomi Novik or Shauna Maguire. So let's do that.
Well, I will say that at least the marketing people gave us permission to complain a bit about it.
It's a bad sign when in a fantasy novel, I'm starting to make up
weird ideas as to what the physics of the world is.
Well, I mean, I like that. And that's kind of what makes a fantasy novel is there's, as opposed to like a folklore or fairy tale, is there's an internal consistency to the narrative and the world itself.
And I'm not sure that this world is inconsistent. She doesn't show powers in quite the same way.
You're right.
There mostly is, she just has friends.
There's well,
look at the venom I just injected into that word.
Friends. It's like that stupid TV show.
And no one told you you would be a Dormavoy.
Yeah. God. And you're right that there was consistency there in that aspect where it's like, you know, yes, if you don't feed the spirits, then they die. They can't help you win. I mean, there's parts where the upir, in which took me a while to kind of go, is that supposed to be like a zombie, a vampire? It's like, yeah, I guess it's supposed to be a Russian vampire.
Into it later, it's not that that's a Russian vampire.
It's just similar blood sucking monster or whatever.
Quite the opposite. Vampires are based on that.
Well, that's what I was saying. Is like, it sounds like the upir sounds like the word just sounds like it's like, okay, I can see how upir would turn into vampire.
Right. I mean, it's not like it's like our concept of the vampire.
It's the genesis of it.
That's where we stole the idea.
Yeah. We co-opted it.
Like, we borrowed it.
We sucked it.
Yes. Well, that's appropriate then.
That was the joke.
But yes, the... you know, they're trying to get, I think that was one scene where they were trying to get in, and because she had fed the, you know, the Domovoy, it was like, I'm not going to let it in. And I'm strong enough now to prevent it from getting in, and other things too, I think. But that was something where, you know, one of the things you can kind of connect to when, you know, her nursemaid dies, you know, shortly after she gets the jewel, and she shows up as, you know, an upir later.
Right.
And
it's one of those things where, you know, like I say, there are so many things that I like in this book, and they just didn't quite meld together for me. I mean, it has zombies.
Yeah, I guess that's what I mean about the internal consistency, where she just knew how to do things, or she just tried really hard to, like, you know, because over and over again, they're like, you know, someone would say, don't do this or do this, or like, you know, the Frost King guy, he was like, okay, at midwinter, we're going to do this, you know, we're going to, you know, rebind my brother and put him back to sleep. And then like the next day she's like, okay, I'm going out there to grab my stepmother. And she's the one who kind of figured out stepmother can also see stuff, you know, see the spirits. And so that's a way to give, you know, the bear the power is, right, you know, to kill someone who could see the spirits. And so she's like, okay, so we have to go out now and do it. and he kind of shows up, and the Frost King shows up, and he's like, whoa, well, sorry about that. You know, you should have waited till later. And she's like, we can't. And he's like, oh, okay, well, go do it. He basically says, go do it. And she, you know, I was like, how does she know how to do it? She's had no Jedi training. Like, you know,
Jack Frost is Yoda.
So it's like, and
Jack Frost is Rey. She's Rey.
There's no explicit, you know, spells that she's learned or anything like that. And which isn't necessarily bad. It's just that I didn't get the sense of it was just sort of like, she tried a bunch of stuff and then some of that stuff worked. And then finally at the end, they're like, oh crap. And then the father sacrificed himself.
Yeah. I mean, there are bad things that happen, but I don't see her sort of learning from her mistakes. I mean, like in Naomi Novik's novel in Uprooted, you know, like, there's a period of time as our main character sort of learns her limitations and, you know, learns from her mistakes when she sort of like grabs all the potions and, you know, goes to save the village. And it turns out, well, yeah, you can do that, but
you just use 60 years worth of work.
Yeah, exactly. And once again, that it's not a flaw. It's a genre difference. And
well, right. That's kind of what I was saying, is like, what's a fairy tale versus what's, and it's, you know, the words don't necessarily quite, you know, fantasy is this, fairy tale is this. It's sort of like there's some delineation and it's a gray area. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to kind of, you know, well, what makes them different? And I think part of it is sort of an internal physics to it that's explicit in some way.
Right.
And so it's like the ending wasn't bad. It just sort of, it kind of happened, and it kind of felt like that, like I was saying before, that's the whole point, was she sort of overcame things because she was, you know, nice to people and the spirit. She was very brave. That was like a major component.
Sure.
You know, she didn't just do what she was told. She did what she thought was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of like the point, you know, or at least that seemed like that to me.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I think that that worked. All right. Well, I think that the snow is falling outside, despite it being California and the sky being bright blue. And the oupiers are lining up outside. They seem to have like set up some sort of turnstiles and number thing.
Quick feed the domovoy.
So, yeah, I think it's time for us to quick learn some psychic powers of our own. So until next time, we have been Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.